You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to my guest, Alicia Capani. We talk about her personal journey through depression. This is a little bit of a trigger warning for anybody listening and watching. If you're in the car with small ears or you're just not in the mood, this is not an especially graphic story. That's not that kind of show. But we do talk about depression, including suicidal thoughts or ideation. So just know. Alicia shares what she experienced, what it felt like, what therapies she tried, what doctors she consulted with, and then thankfully, what she found that helped her and her journey. I ask her about the choices and decisions that she made along the way, and she's very open about her experience, which is really nice. I think that for many people, this story will be one that you really enjoy. So let's do it. Welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. Alicia Capani, are you ready for a fun chat today?
I really am.
Let's do it. I start all of my interviews asking my guests what part of the world they call home. So where are you?
I'm in Calgary, Alberta in Canada.
All right. So forgive my, I can't do geography and ask questions at the same time. Is that on the east or the west coast?
West.
West coast. All right. Very cool. Very cool. All right. One more warm-up question, which is we are recording this almost at the tail end of 2025. People won't get to watch it or listen to it until the spring, but what is something when you look back over the last 12 months that you feel like you've learned?
Okay, I learned a lot about myself. I learned, like, I had some epiphanies about why I'm not in a relationship, like a romantic relationship. Because even though I was consciously saying I wanted something serious, I really had a lot of fears because when I had severe depression, that's the only time I've been in love. So there's part of me that correlates that my mood will be strongly affected by another person. And I'm very afraid of that. So I've been only entertaining people I don't see something serious with. So it just was kind of an epiphany for me. I didn't realize that I was so afraid of being in love.
I think that is a really genuine and true, like, a thank you for just immediately, right from the start, getting super true and vulnerable. All right, so I'm going to introduce the topic for today, which actually relates to what you just said. This is a teeny tiny bit of a trigger warning for anybody who's listening, just so you know what to expect. We are going to talk about a time in your life when you were experiencing depression, which you mentioned. And I think you may have also had thoughts of self-harm and even what we call suicidal ideation. And so I throw those words out there so that people who are in a spot who are like, I'm not in the mood for that today. This is not an expose type dramatic show, but if you're not in the mood for that today, now you know what we're going to talk about. We are going to talk about that today. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. She's like, yeah, I am. Is there a question? Where's the question? That's it. Let's start about talking about what was going on in your life at the time. Like, how long ago was this and how old were you?
So I was 22. So that was like nine or 10 years ago.
It's
like,
impossible.
I can't do math.
You cannot do, it is like counting and playing cards. It is like, you can't do these two things at the same time. Answering the question and doing math is not. And so for me, I can only come up with those numbers if I've got it memorized. If I'm like, yeah, this was 10 years ago. And then once I've told a story a bunch of times, like if I tell the same story over a period of like a decade, I will eventually realize that I'm giving the wrong number because I've been giving the same number for, you know, over a year.
Yeah, exactly. You have to update.
And then sometimes I will catch myself in conversations. I'm like, listen, I am focused on this, but I'm doing math in my head because I was about, you know, well, how long ago was that? All right. So you were, so that's how long ago this was. All right. I'm not a doctor and I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist. Are you?
No, I call myself a mind-body mentor. So
mind-body mentor.
Yeah.
All right. So were you ever during this time, just as a point of reference, not as a how-to or anything, were you ever under the care of a doctor for diagnosis, prescriptions, or anything like that while you were going through this?
Yes, I was. That was the first thing I tried because, at the time I didn't know everything that I knew now. So I only knew you go to the doctor, and then I was diagnosed with depression, and then they put me on antidepressants and wanted me to see a psychologist and a psychiatrist. And so I tried that for a really long time, but the medication wasn't having any effect on me, like positive or negative. So then they kept increasing the dosage or trying different ones, putting me on multiple at the same time. And it was just like I was taking a sugar pill. And I wasn't feeling any relief from doing like cognitive behavioral therapy and everything that they were trying to get me to do. And so that's when I started trying other unconventional things because I was like so desperate to heal at one point. So yeah, no, I was, and I definitely tried that. It's only because it didn't offer anything to me that I started looking elsewhere.
I appreciate the answer for that. And I just want to add for you, because you and I just met today. When I ask that, it's not in any way meant to be a judgment of the path that you followed. But it is a thing. People are always like, "Well, did you see a doctor? Did you start with like a medical doctor, or were you able? You're in Canada, and I'm not. Were you able to go straight to like a psychologist, or you had
Yeah,
to?
right
Yeah.
away. Yeah.
Okay. All right, very good. Sometimes you have to start with like your, at least where I live, you have to start with your personal physician. And then it's like you have to convince them that you should see someone else, and they have to tell you who that is. And then you have to go over there and make your case like, "Hey, I need some help." So not everybody on the planet is going to experience depression, right? I think that almost everybody's going to know what it feels like to be sad. That's my guess. But those two things I think are different. My experience is that it can be very hard for one person who is experiencing something and going through it to be understood by other people who have not ever experienced it. And my really ridiculous example of this is like, I've never had red hair, so I don't actually know what it's like to live as a redhead, right? I can like see it, but I'm never really going to understand it. That's a silly example, but what I want to do is ask you to describe in your words and your experience, thinking back to when you knew you wanted help and support, and you before maybe around the time before you even got the diagnosis of depression, if you can share a little bit about what it felt like to you, like what were you experiencing?
So I remember just losing all motivation, and it was a really dramatic change. So that's how I could tell that something was off because I was like such a nerd and I was always studying, and I was just like one of those people that you couldn't get me to take a break when I was studying. And then when I had depression, it was like total opposite. Like I couldn't study at all. I would just be staring out the window and couldn't focus on anything. And I had just like really low energy. I noticed I wanted to sleep a lot because I was in such a bad mood that I wanted time to just pass me by. So I found that the nighttime wasn't that hard because as soon as it got dark, I would just go to sleep. But the mornings and the daytime were like really hard for me. And it felt like, well, first of all, my mood felt like it was dictated on everything around me and outside of me and how people treated me. And I was in a relationship at the time, so it was very much tied to him and, if he was showing me love, if he was available, like all that kind of stuff. But even whether our relationship was like good or not, there was still always this underlying feeling of just like in a really bad mood. I don't know how to describe it. It's like you're dense and you're feeling heavy and like nothing can bring you joy. And so I was doing a lot of like distracting, just like thinking that, okay, if I just stay busy, if I hang out with my friends a lot, if I get a new job, if I travel more or whatever, then I'll feel better. So I was trying, a lot of that, but obviously I wasn't getting to the root cause, so it wasn't helping.
I think that sounds to me like it was a very good description. And I appreciate you sharing it with us. Did you have, when you were you realized you were going to ask for support and help, and then somebody said, "Hey, you have depression." When before that, what did you think? Like, did you go in like you do like when I have strep throat, I go in, I'm like, I'm pretty sure I have strep throat, like because I like did you have a suspicion that this was or a thought that this was what was going on, or did you think that something else was the cause?
So for the first year, I did not think I had depression. I thought that so I was graduating. It was my last year of university. So I thought that it was because I was losing a sense of purpose. Like I had nothing I was working towards anymore. You know, had a job lined up already. So I thought maybe that was it. And I had started taking birth control. So I thought maybe it was like a hormonal thing. I did not put that together. And it was only when I broke up with my boyfriend that now I was feeling so much worse because I already had depression, but not aware of it. And then when I broke up with him, I lost even temporary joy. So now I had no joy. So that's when I just felt so terrible that I went to the doctor. But I guess it didn't occur to me until they said it that I had depression.
Very interesting. Okay, so you were a student, you were in a relationship, you graduated. You were in a pretty, I know this from reading your backstory a little bit. You were in a pretty intense course of study. You were engineering, is that right?
Yeah, engineering, yeah.
I think it makes sense that that would be the first. It is a big transition. It's a hard program. It's a big transition to graduate. All of those things. I can very easily see how that would be. Well, this must be what's going on because that's what's happening. So, what was the impact? And you talked about how you felt a lot of fatigue, lack of motivation, wanting to sleep, those kind of things. What would you do? How would you describe the impact on your day-to-day life when you were going through this? Like, impact is a weird word, but how is it showing up to other people?
Yeah, so to other people, well, I guess in my job, I was not a very good worker anymore. It was also night and day different because before that, you know, I was getting really great reviews. I was even getting like awards. And then all of a sudden, it was like I could just feel that everyone was disappointed with me, if that makes sense. You know, so that made it even harder because I was like, they had certain expectations for me of what I'm like. And then I'm not that person anymore. And they hired me because they thought that I would be a really good worker. And then all of a sudden, like, I'm not trying very hard, you know? So it was definitely impacting my job, or maybe it was in my head. I don't know. Like, it's not like I ever got fired or anything, but like, I just felt like I wasn't performing.
I wondered as you said that was the question that went through my head, but it wouldn't be a good question, but I wondered, I was like, wow, I wondered if I talked to the person on the other side of that conversation, if they had that same perception or if you were like just so hyper-tuned to that it was like, they know that I'm not working as hard as I could.
Yeah. I did have a manager tell me that I was a perfectionist. So I think they were picking up on something that I felt like I wasn't good enough and so that I needed to be perfect or something. So they could sense something for sure. But yeah, that's how it was affecting my work. My relationship, so that guy I was dating, you know, we were on and off. So, you know, we got back together and now he knows I have depression, but he has anxiety. So it was like his anxiety was making him distant, emotionally unavailable, which was making me feel worse. And so it was like this thing where both of our mental illnesses were triggering the other person, and we were in this cycle, and neither one of us was actually healing. You know, like both of us were
This is
trying.
a very 2025 conversation because in like 1995, like I do not know that there were people sitting around. They're like, I have depression, he has anxiety, and that was a problem in our relationship.
Yeah. It's so true. And like, even though we were both trying to get help at the time, right? Like, I think he was on medication and he was seeing a therapist like once in a while. And I was trying medication at this time, seeing a psychiatrist. So, like, we were trying to heal. But I don't think either one of us truly wanted to heal, if that makes sense. We just wanted the pain to go away. And we didn't truly care about like growing and giving our body what it needs. And like, it was still a form of suppression. And like, I don't know, something's wrong with us, you know? So like, I don't think either one of us were truly anywhere close to healing. And so it wasn't until like we officially broke up that I had a true interest in healing because I didn't want to experience that again. Like it was extremely painful. And then obviously getting over someone is extremely painful. And having your mood dictated by another person, it's just not, it feels like you have to control your life to be free. And so I was like, I don't want to live like that. And so I think I needed to lose that temporary joy to actually try to find unconditional joy. As long as he was in my life, I had no interest in creating unconditional joy because I was like, okay, at least when I'm with him, I'm fine.
Yeah, I think that you hit on something that, you experienced, you learned from. It's probably very painful. It shows up in a bunch of different places. When we are in pain, when we are sick, we want it to go away. We don't necessarily want to rebuild or solve all of the things that led to the occasion. So, when you want the prescription, you want the shot, you want the magic fix, you want it to end. You don't want somebody to look at you and say, "Oh, you know what? What you need to do is spend 2 years rebuilding your life, or this is because you didn't eat broccoli, 45 for 45 years." Like, nobody likes to hear that, right? Like, that for me, that's like, by the time you get to the, I mean, my dad died of heart disease, so this is not my story, but by the time he got to the cardiologist, all the things that he had done to build up to that were the things that led to it, and so that it would have been great if 30 years before he had made different decisions.
100%.
But he did not want the cardiologist to tell him that when he got there, and it wouldn't have been if he, it wouldn't have been there. All right, so I'm off track a teeny tiny bit. I think the reason, and I'm speculating here, that one of the reasons, and I'm going to add like a, well, actually, let me back up, and I'm just going to ask you this: what is it about this story? Why do you think it's important or significant for you to share this personal story of this experience for you?
I think because so many people are managing their illness, whether it's a mental or physical illness, because they think that that is all that's available. Like, I can only do medication and try to change my thoughts, and that is the only thing that's available for me. And I feel like a lot of people are not addressing the root cause, and therefore they have to manage it for the rest of their life. And maybe they even think that's healing. Right? They
Right.
think they healed from depression once they are on medication that works for them. But I guess I just want people to know that once you get to the root cause, you can heal very quickly. Like I did heal pretty much right away once I figured out what the root cause was. And that on the other side of it is more joy than you've ever experienced in your life before, because now it is unconditional. It's not based on anything external, like a relationship, a job, anything. And it's changed my life in like all the best ways. I feel like I'm a completely different person. And I guess I just want that for everyone. I get confused when people don't want to be unconditionally free. I'm like,
Right.
why? Why is this something you don't want? Why are you okay with managing? And I think it's because they think that's all that's available, so they don't even want to consider anything else, because then they're going to think that they can't have that, and then it's going to make them feel worse. So they're okay with like bare minimum. And so I guess I just want people to know that you can heal from depression and what it looks like and what it feels like, and to give people hope, especially people that have suicidal thoughts. If all they did was listen to this and then realize, like, oh, I can heal, and then it stops them from committing suicide, because that has happened to me. People have watched my videos and said that to me. And that's why I continued with this, because I was actually going to take all my YouTube videos down because I was so embarrassed, because I could tell that my friends and family don't understand what I do for work now, and they don't understand why I would leave engineering to do this. And I could feel their judgment. So I
Yeah.
wanted to take everything down. But then I
I
heard
was
this
smiling as you
story.
said that, not because it's funny, but because one of my kids is getting ready to graduate from school, and they were trying very recently, they were trying to explain to one of their grandparents about their job, and it was hilarious because there was no understanding whatsoever happening in the conversation. It was really a funny conversation. It was like, okay, Nobody understands. All right. So I apologize if it seemed out of context. And I also want to shed light on the fact that, just throw this back, that earlier in this conversation, we talked about the fact that you did work within the medical department, medical options, and you did try the medicines. And this is your experience. Because sometimes I think that people can be critical and say, like that we're saying something we're not. We're sharing your experience and what you had. We are not telling anybody what they should do,
Yeah, I
or
never
what
told them.
medications they should take. And everybody should listen to their doctors. And if it's working for you, do it. Anyway, I'm also out there on the YouTube streets, and so it is something you're always aware of, that people will come back to you and be like, "Well, are you saying this thing?" It's like, maybe, maybe not. All right. Anyway, so you are on the other side of this. You have worked through it. And so we are talking about it from that perspective. And I think that that's really helpful for people to know very much about what you were saying, that there is the possibility that there is another side of it. Because I think when you're in the middle of an intense experience, it can be hard to see that. When you were in the middle of this, did you question whether or not there was a way out?
You know what? I actually would have that thought a lot that I'm like, I must be able to heal because I've felt joy before.
Okay.
So even though I wasn't feeling joy at the time, I have felt joy in the past. So I kept reminding myself of that. But I wasn't aware that it was going to be better than that on the other side. I think I always thought it would go back to the way I was before where I have felt joy. But no, it was like, okay, I feel more joy than ever. And it grows and grows and grows every day, the more that I heal and release like dense emotions.
Really interesting. Okay, so let's talk about, we're going to talk about the experience of working through this a little bit. Did you have, you were in a relationship, and you've talked a little bit about that. Did you have support? And what kind of support did you have as you were going through this? Were your family trying to help you, friends that were trying to understand, teachers because you were in school for part of this, or other community that was around you as you were trying to get through this?
Yeah, so it was a 5-year journey. So like for the first year, I didn't even know what was going on, so I wasn't asking for support. And then once I realized it, like friends were there, and I didn't tell my mom just because I knew she would be so worried about me. I think I like eventually told her, but I just knew she'd be so worried about me, so I didn't really talk to her about it. But you know, that's actually, I guess, you know. Or you're saying, do you not want to talk about something? I can talk about this.
You
I
don't
just,
have to. You don't have to.
no, I think I should. But yeah, my stepmom was the one that was there for me throughout everything. And I had actually refused to meet her before I had depression because I didn't want to hurt my mom. But when I had depression, I had this feeling of like, I just want to get out of town. I wanted to leave Calgary and I just wanted to be distracted, which obviously wasn't helping me, but that's what I wanted. So then I went to visit my dad, and that's when I met my stepmom. And she was so sweet and nothing like what I had thought she would be. And she was there for me more than anyone when I had depression. But that's also because I allowed her to be. I know that my mom would have also been there for me. I just knew she'd be so worried about me, so I didn't tell her. So my
That's
stepmom was
interesting. It's
definitely the biggest.
also, so I'm a stepmom, and all of my kids are grown. Every once in a while, not all the time and not as a rule, but every once in a while, that slightly outsider perspective allows for support and help and just observation in a way that the people who you have the tighter, longer relationship to, the experience and the, it doesn't work. They're too close, and you were very interested in protecting your mom. And so, the fact that you didn't know this person in a weird way set it up, set it up. It's kind of like, when you have pets in a house and you live there all the time, you don't smell the pet smell. Somebody has to come in from the outside and be like, "Oh my God." Right? It's like you can be too close. I want to also say I'm thankful that it worked out that way, that you were able to put yourself in a spot where you did that. But it does sound actually like you did have quite a bit of people who were around in your sphere that were there in small and big ways as you were working through this. Okay, so we've talked a little bit about this, but I want to make sure we touch on the things that you did and the things that you tried as you were going through this. So initially, right off the bat, you work with some doctors and you get a diagnosis. You try some pharmacological, if that's the right word, solutions that I think you said were not effective for you, which happens. And you also were using traditional narrative talk therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy. What other things did you try in this process? And you can talk about the things that you tried that are traditional, and also some of the things you tried that were what we would call non-traditional.
So once that wasn't working, I started to Google how to heal from depression. So then I was trying everything. Click every single link, go to the second page, third page, click every single link. Whether it was known to help depression or not, I was willing to try it. So that's when I started opening to unconventional things that I'd never heard before, like Reiki, like hypnosis, like acupuncture. I was even going to try cryotherapy, where you're in this like liquid nitrogen tank, because like that can apparently boost your mood. Supplements, like so many things. But still wasn't seeing relief, because everything that I was trying, it was still a form of suppression. It was just like, I want this to go away. Please go away. Like, there was no compassion for myself. There was no bringing awareness to what I'm feeling. There was no love or empathy or curiosity on, like, why did this happen all of a sudden? What is my body trying to tell me? Like, I wasn't doing any of that. It was still just, okay, I was actually trying like three, four things at once at a time, because I was so desperate to heal.
Which
So,
does make it hard to figure out which thing is working.
yeah, I know. But I was
I
so
do that all
desperate.
the
And I
time.
was like, I want to heal as fast as possible. So then I know there was a time where I was seeing a hypnotherapist and an acupuncturist at the same time. And then I'd be seeing them once a week. And so it was adding up to thousands of dollars every month. And I wasn't really seeing relief either, you know? And so I gave up after that, actually, because I had honestly felt like I'd tried everything. Because, like I said, I was Googling and trying everything. And so I went back to distracting mode. Because after 3 to 4 years of trying to heal and it not working, I was like, and then also contemplating suicide, and then realizing I wasn't gonna go through with suicide for lots of reasons. I was like, okay, well, if I'm not gonna take my life and I haven't found anything that works, I have to find a way to just manage this pain for the rest of my life until maybe one day something changes miraculously, you know? So then I went into distracting with work. So I took this job that's in the field, where you're a construction engineer. So you work in a camp, you live in the camp, you work 12 to 16 hour days, you're like 2 weeks on, 1 week off. So I took the job because I thought I would be distracted for a majority of the day, which was true. The only time I was alone was when I would go to bed, you know, like every other moment of the day, you're living together in this camp. So I wasn't alone. So yeah, but it was
Did that
then,
work? Like, was it effective in distracting you?
it distracted me, but it
Okay.
wasn't healing me, right?
Right. And I
But
think that I think it's easy to, so you're on the other side. This is why I wanted to point that out when we that you've made it through that. I think, did you know you were distracting, looking for distraction at the time? You were
the
aware?
way I worded it was, I want a drastic change.
Okay.
That's what I called it.
Because I just think for people, I think it's a really, really common thing where people in all kind of situations where people will throw them in themselves into something to avoid something they don't want to experience. Like, and to some extent it works. And so like, I just wanted to throw that out for people that are in that spot where they're like, yeah, I'm just going to work 20 hours a day because it's my best option at the time, you know, like that. And I think also for the person who's doing it, it doesn't always feel like you're looking for an escape.
Yeah, exactly. And you
Yeah.
know, the guy that triggered the depression, we talked, I think, 4 or 5 years after we broke up, and he was in that exact state. He's like, you know what? I found a way that I just stay busy with work and it works for me, and I don't feel my anxiety. And I could feel for him where he was at, because I also made that same choice, just
Right.
distract work, because I don't think anything else works. But that was all I needed to hear to know that, like, you wouldn't be a reliable partner for me. So then we didn't get back together.
So I did interrupt you. I apologize that. So you were working through that. So you find your way into this. You're working and you're working and you're working. But there's a piece of you, it sounds like, that knew that this was not a long-term solution for what you were doing. So pick it up from there.
So I wasn't aware of what was happening, but because I had stopped trying all these things to heal and I just kind of surrendered, there was this like 2% little opening that happened within me where now I was, I don't know how to describe it. I wasn't trying to make my pain go away anymore. Even though I was still doing the distracting thing a little bit, I wasn't sending this message to my body like something is so wrong with you that needs to be fixed and changed and all that. So that 2% little opening had me synchronistically find my mentor. Like I just like signed up for this summit where she was speaking on it, and when I heard her speak, I was like, I need to work with her. And it was a really big deal because that's the only time that like my entire body lit up and was like, this feels like a hell yes. And nothing else I had tried before felt like that. It felt like, okay, I'm just desperate to heal, so let me just try anything. This was the only thing that felt like so light. And I had promised myself that I wouldn't spend any more money on any sort of modality because I was like wasting money. And so I promised myself that I wouldn't. But when I heard her speak, I was like, I'm doing her DIY course. Like, there was no question. There was no ifs, ands, or buts. It was like, I'm doing this. And then I healed just by doing her DIY course before I even started working with her privately and before she became my mentor and transformed my entire life.
Okay, so let's. I
So,
want to recap this. So, like, my next question was going to be, what choices and decisions, right, were you making in here? And I think that this is a good time to talk about this. So, you had made the progressive and repetitive choice as you were going through this to seek support and advice from doctors and healers. And so that was a choice that you were making over and over again. You get to a point where it sounds like, until as me recapping, so tell me if I get this wrong, you were like, all right, enough money down the drain with chasing this down the rabbit hole. I'm not spending any more money on this. And unintentionally, it sounds like you look back and you realize that you had chosen to surrender a little bit. Then you become aware of you're calling her your mentor. You respond to an ad. You watch a. How do you find? How does she enter your universe where you get to see this presentation and you choose to become her client?
So somehow I signed up for this online summit. It was called the Winter of Wellness Summit, which also I don't even know how I signed up for it because
Okay.
back then I wasn't into these type of things. Now I listen to these type of summits all the time, but back then wasn't into that kind of stuff. So I don't even remember how I heard of it, but I signed up for the summit and then I heard her speak on the summit and she was the only one that resonated with me. I don't know why, but looking back, I think it was because she was an emergency medicine doctor and then created the mind body medicine business because she felt like when people were coming into the ER, she could feel the emotional root cause as to how this happened, how it got to the point of a physical illness. But people coming into the ER are not usually looking to address the root cause. They're like, just make
Right,
the pain go away
stitches,
now,
right.
right? So she realized that she had this skill that there was no room for it in the conventional medical system. So then she created her own business. But she was really good at explaining the science behind self-healing and how your body already knows how to heal itself and like listening to the body's wisdom that it already knows why it's sick and exactly what it needs. And so you need to be tuning in so that there's no guesswork. And just everything she said like really resonated with me because I was an engineer, so I was really analytical, and so I wasn't open into, I don't know, like energy, consciousness, like spiritual stuff. I wasn't like open to that at the time. But now that's like how I like live and breathe. So I never would have thought.
That is really interesting. Okay, I appreciate that. Okay, so I'm going to ask you what you think about this, but it's a long. I sometimes get very wordy. Okay, so mental health, self-help, personal development, all those fields, right? Very popular. I love them. I'm not the number one expert in any of this stuff. I do feel like one of the things that I see is that each person can have a very unique experience of like a lot of different parts of their life, like including, happiness, sadness, anything. And I think that one of the things that's really interesting about that is that, everybody is having their own different experience. All the other people watching that summit with you, they were having their own experience in the summit. And I do think that that can make it challenging on a bunch of different fronts. One is it can make it hard to understand and sympathize and empathize with what other people are experiencing at any given time, just because we're in a different spot with a different perspective. We're talking about your journey today and you're sharing that experience. But what do you think when I say that, when I'm like, everybody is having this, their own individual experience, and it makes it very complicated to show up for each other in a bunch of different ways?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think after I've gone through these things, I'm way more understanding. Like, I don't think I ever looked at people before and thought, why do they do hurtful things or say these things or whatever? And now it's because I'm super sensitive. I can feel it in another person if it's something that I have felt before. So either it's something I've felt within myself or with a client. As long as I've felt it before, then I can immediately recognize it in another person and I can realize, oh, that's why they're doing these things. That's why they're so competitive with me, right? Or whatever. And I can be more understanding. And then it makes me like not take it personally. And so, yeah, I can get how it can be hard to sympathize and understand because I was that person. But now that I've been through it, it's so easy for me to be understanding because I'm like, I get why you're doing what you're doing because I did all the same things.
And you actually, you mentioned that you were an engineer by study and trade, and you were not a spiritual woo person. If we went back to like the version of you like 15 years ago before you did all this and said, something like, hey, someday in the future, you're gonna lean into a sort of spiritual woo-ish therapy and it's going to work for you. What would your reaction at the time have been?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I would have been shocked because my mom tried to, when she divorced my dad, she went through a spiritual experience and she started trying to push that on me and my sister, like all about manifestation and that kind of stuff. And she kept trying to push it on me. So I think if someone told me that, I'd be like, no way. Like, I know myself, I'm not into this. But then also looking back, I was always very sensitive. And I guess I just didn't realize that it was a gift. So I think, I don't know, if someone had worded it like that, that you are sensitive, you are intuitive, and you're not tapping into that, I could have probably been able to receive that.
All right, that's a fun question. All right, so when do you remember? So you'd go to this summit, you talk about that her message immediately resonated with you. Tell us a little bit, if you can, when you became aware that what you were doing with this mentor was helping you and making a difference. Can you talk a little bit about what that felt like in the moment that you were going through it, that you were like, oh, you know what? I am feeling better.
Yeah. So I could tell that I was feeling better because my peace and joy was unconditional, like I was talking about earlier. Meaning, like, I wasn't feeling better because I had a new boyfriend or because I got a new job or because I made a new friend. I literally just started feeling better even when everything in my life was the same. I was still single, I was still in the same job. Everything was exactly the same, and yet I was starting to feel more joy and peace. So that's how I could tell I was starting to heal because I was actually starting to just feel unconditional peace and joy. And it started off like small, but because I didn't diminish it, it kept expanding. But I think if I had just written it off like, okay, yeah, I feel a little bit better, but I still have suicidal thoughts sometimes, then I would have, I think, not healed as fast. So I do think that, when people say like what you focus on expands, it was one of those type of things that I wasn't diminishing when I could feel that I felt differently. And I actually felt really thankful. I was like, wow, I feel so much lighter today than I did yesterday. And it's kind of one of those things like, have you ever been like super sick and you're throwing up and then you feel a little bit better and you don't feel like throwing up anymore and you're like, oh my God, I'm so grateful that I feel better than I did an hour ago. It's like one of those type of things that I brought awareness to the fact that I was feeling lighter.
The thing that always happens to me when I'm sick, like when you're really sick, when you get like a flu, Right. And you're like down for the count is I'm like, oh my God, I'm so thankful. I'm better. I think I'm all the way better. And then the next day I'm like, oh my gosh, I was still so sick yesterday. I was so thankful for just that little bit of better that it's like, this is so good. I feel so good. And then I get even better and I'm like, oh, I thought I was good yesterday, but look at this. I was still pretty sick yesterday. I'm always surprised by how fast that like awareness needle will be, right? Like, so, so that's something that I have a history of doing. It's like, I think I'm better. And then the next day I'm like, oh, I was wrong. Now I'm better. And then the next day I'm like, oh, I was wrong. And now I'm better. All right, very good. So in a second, we're going to do the final questions. I want to give you a chance to tell people because you, as part of this change, I think that you shifted to working with other people on this type of stuff. So tell people what you do these days and how they can connect and follow you online.
Yeah, so I'm a mind body mentor, which pretty much just means that we are shifting your consciousness. That means your thoughts and emotions and your inner state. So I'm really big into quantum physics. So essentially, it's saying your consciousness is creating your reality. Your beliefs are creating your reality. Your thoughts are affecting your health. So, this is what we're addressing that most people don't address when they have an illness. They're only addressing the physical symptoms and they're not aware that there was something internally that caused this physical manifestation, the limiting beliefs that they're carrying, the trauma they're storing in their body. So, that's what I help people do is heal the root cause by listening to their own body's wisdom. I got into this because that was the only thing that helped me heal. And I just want people to listen to their own bodies. And for every person, that is different, right? So, yeah, that's essentially what I do. Is that what your
Very
question
good.
was?
Yeah, no, that was it. That was it. You have a special offer for the audience so that they can check it out themselves. This is, you call it three ways to raise your vibration fast. And this is a bundle, which means probably it's a collection of different things that is normally valued at $100, but there's a link in the show notes and the description of this interview where people can redeem it for free and try this out and see what a little bit of the work that you do is and how it might. How might be helpful or resonate for them. That is a very generous offer, and I want to thank you very, very much for that. Alicia, are you ready to wrap this up with my final three questions? All right, very good. All right, you and I are having a conversation right before New Year's Eve. The question will be out of date when this goes live, but it'll still be fun. Do you like to set New Year's resolutions for yourself or not?
Not from the mind, right? Like, I feel like people are like, oh, I want to make this much money or I want to lose this much weight or whatever. But I feel like there's actually more in store for you than what your mind thinks. So I go for what I can tell my body is wanting. So if I feel a longing for something, it can show up in different ways. Like, if I see someone and I'm jealous of something that they have, okay, that's telling me I have a longing for an essence of what they have. So that means that's available for me. So it could be even bigger than what I think it is. So I think I mean, I definitely have like a plan and things like that, but I listen to my body intuitively in every moment. So I would never force my body or abandon my body to create success because I know
Okay.
that doesn't actually create anything.
All right. I love it. Okay. Very good. Do you read or listen to books? And if so, do you want to share a good book that you've read or listened to recently?
Yeah, actually, right now I'm reading a book. It's called Love and Respect, which is all about how women just want to feel loved and men just want to feel respected. And so it's just like a different respect perspective. I like to try to understand men and how they think differently than women, to prepare for when I'm in a relationship and stuff like that. But I thought it was an interesting perspective because I always thought that men wanted to feel needed and they wanted to feel like you trust them. But I guess I never really use the term respect, like that it's so important to them that they feel respected. So, yeah, I'm loving the book.
Very cool. All right, very good. Okay. So, last one. If you go to the movie theater or if you're watching a movie at home on your couch, do you have a favorite movie time snack that you enjoy that you'll share with us?
Popcorn, and I like truffle salt on it.
Oh, yes. Oh my gosh. So, I've recently discovered like finishing salt, Jacobson's finishing salt, if anybody's super curious about it. And so we have black garlic finishing salt that we are all putting all over everything. in our house this time. The truffle salt is one of the most popular, delicious combinations. That's it, Alicia Capani. Thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi, again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adultier adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.